I.E. Demon, the second draft.
They called it the BSE 7, but they didn't tell us what it stood for. We were just the grunts, after all, and they were the engineers. They created the technology, and we had to test it. And that was fine. That's the way it had been since I'd been stationed in Afghanistan 6 months earlier. And that's the way it had been for years, for centuries before that. What kind of test do you want?
The BSE 7 is an explosives nullification device. We've installed it in an up-armored Humvee, and we need you to take that Humvee through hostile territory and see if it works.
See if it works?
If nothing blows up, it works. We'll follow you with a bomb squad to see if we can find anything the BSE 7 nullifies.
And how exactly does it nullify IEDs?
I'm afraid you're not cleared for that information.
So I kept a civil expression and got in the Humvee and headed out into the desert. I wasn't cleared to know what I was driving, but I was cleared to drive it through Taliban Central, hoping somebody tried to blow us up. A glamorous life of a soldier. The first IED turned up in a spot called the Brambles, about an hour north of our firebase and some of the worst terrain in Afghanistan. We didn't see anything, but the minesweeper behind us called an all-stop because their detectors had turned up a broken one. Not so much broken, once we looked at it, as it was just built wrong from the beginning. I'd never seen an IED so poorly put together. It looked like a broken clock in a Bugs Bunny cartoon, with wires and bits hanging off it in all directions. I told the two engineers I was sorry we hadn't found a real IED to test their device on, but they seemed just as excited with the broken one as you could possibly imagine. Like it was the most thrilling damn thing dug out of the desert since King Tut. I rolled my eyes and got back in the Humvee. And my crew drove on through the Brambles for about 20 more minutes before the engineers called another all-stop. I got out to look at the new find.
Useless.
The bomb tech was examining the new mine we'd driven over.
Better than the last one, but still hopelessly broken. The fuse isn't connected to anything.
This is wonderful.
Two IEDs inside half an hour. There's active insurgents in the area, no question.
Grossly incompetent insurgents.
My driver wore a smug look on his face. They only have to get lucky once. The engineers insisted we keep going, and my orders were to follow them, so I did. The third IED was only 15 minutes down the road, and the bomb tech practically took the thing apart before he let any of us get close.
This one was live.
The tech showed us the disassembled pieces.
You drove right over it, and it could have gone off. And as far as I can tell, it should have gone off, but it didn't. I can't explain it.
Well, the insurgents' bomb guy's getting better.
Or our bomb nullifier's getting worse. I looked at the engineers. The BSE 7 is what's doing this, right? Whatever your little device is, it breaks the IEDs before they go off.
Correct. But it's not necessarily getting weaker.
He might be calibrating his power output to a sustainable level. We don't need to destroy them, like he did with the first, just stop them. Like he did with this one.
He?
It. I misspoke.
The lead engineer smiled, and the other engineer smiled, and I looked at the bomb tech, and then at my driver, and I could tell they felt just as nervous as I did. I glanced at my gunner, perched in the turret and looking for trouble, and he gave me a thumbs up. No Taliban in sight. I looked back at the engineers.
So what happens on the next one? Is it calibrating its energy or running out of it?
We won't know until we get more data.
Another IED.
Correct.
Which will either break, like these did, or blow up my Humvee.
Correct. But it's up-armored, so you should be fine.
I had a lot less faith in the armor than they did, and a lot more faith in the armor than in the BSE 7. But orders were orders, and when I radioed back to the firebase, they agreed with the engineers. This test and this device were too crucial to give up halfway. I shrugged my shoulders and shook my driver's hand.
Alpha Mike Foxtrot, it's been nice to know you.
The fourth IED exploded. It wasn't a big explosion. It didn't tear the Humvee in half, the way I'd seen them do in other attacks, but it flipped us upside down off the side of the road. My gunner managed to duck down into the turret before the roll crushed him, and we were rattled and bruised, but alive, and thanks to endless days of crash drills, we managed to get all three of us out of the Humvee in just a few seconds. We came up just in time to see a wrinkly green three-year-old beating the living hell out of the engineer's truck. And I want to be as clear as possible about this so there's no misunderstanding. When I say the living hell, I mean the living, breathing, ever-loving hell. He was remarkably spry, that three-year-old, naked as can be, and jumping around that truck like he was on springs. And everywhere he touched it, the truck fell apart. Not just fell apart, burst apart. Two quick leaps took him from the ground to the fender to the top of the grill, and the fender fell off before his toes even touched down on the hood. He reached out with one hand and grabbed the headlight, and somehow both headlights exploded. Not just the one he touched, but both of them, like New Year's Eve firecrackers packed with chrome and broken glass. The latch on the hood failed suddenly, spectacularly, launching the little green something in the air. While below him, the now exposed engine erupted in a modern dance of bursting caps and hoses, each cylinder and compartment blowing off more steam than they could possibly have been holding. The windshield cracked as the green thing sailed over, and all I could see inside was the bomb tech fighting to get out of a seatbelt that whipped and coiled like a snake. And behind him, the engineers scrambling in their packs like madmen, their faces white with fear. My crew and I ran toward them, racing to help. And as I ran, I raised my rifle to fire at the little green thing dancing madly on the roof. The trigger fell off in my hand, and then the stock, and then the entire gun seemed to field strip itself in a cascade of oily gunmetal. My driver reached the truck's door and yanked on the handle. I expected the handle to come off, but was surprised to see the entire door come flying off, knocking the driver flat on his back as the sudden shift in weight unbalanced him. My gunner reached for the jammed seatbelt with his knife in his hand, but the belt frayed before the knife even got close, evaporating like water. And the bomb tech fell out at a dead run. The little green man was dancing on the roof now, metal cracking and warping and rusting with each wrinkly footstep. I tried to open the back and pull the engineers to safety. The door didn't come off, just peeled away in long, corroded strips. But as scared as they were, they refused to leave without their bags.
Just get out!
Springs were bursting out of the seats like twisted daggers, sending puffs of upholstery wafting through the chaos like fat foam snowflakes.
We need MREs!
What?
Somehow, despite the crazy green weirdo destroying the truck, or maybe because of it, this was the last thing I'd ever expected them to say.
We need the MREs. It's the only way to stop it.
To stop the green guy?
Yeah.
He was chewing on the ceiling now, literally tearing into it with his teeth and ripping out chunks of metal.
Just help us.
You can look for them outside.
I hauled the engineers out by anything I could reach, shoulders and necks and arms, throwing the men in the dirt and tossing their heavy packs on the ground beside them. The truck bucked wildly as the tires exploded. I went for my sidearm, drawing on the wrinkly green man at close range. But the rack slid off like it wasn't even attached, and the bullet sprayed up out of the clip like a metal fountain.
This one caught shrapnel in his neck!
MREs! Find the MREs, as many as you can!
The engineer was already tearing open a plastic bag, dumping the interior pouches in the dirt, and fumbling for one in particular. I ran to the wounded engineer and found a twisted chunk of truck frame lodged in his neck. He was already dead.
We need to get out of here!
I found one!
The lead engineer tore open the smallest pouch from the MRE, the salt, and threw a fistful of the stuff at the wrinkly green thing still tearing the truck to pieces. The green man leaped off the truck and scampered behind a boulder. I stared in surprise, my eyes wide.
We need more salt! Find more MREs!
Soon, all of us were tearing open pouches of food, searching for the little packets of salt, and the engineer led us back to the flip Humvee.
Make a circle around us with the salt!
We had barely enough to complete a thin, scattered border before the wrinkly green thing charged us in a rage, brandishing a jagged tailpipe. It came within a few feet of the salt circle. It retreated again behind the demolished truck.
What in the bright blue hell is that thing?
It's a BSE-7, though it isn't really bound anymore, so it's just an SE. A supernatural entity, Lambda-class demon, minor manifestation.
Minor?
It's a gremlin. They destroy technology. Made them a bitch to study in the lab.
I had no idea what to think, and my mouth seemed incapable of forming any words beyond the first aborted syllables of sentences. To AI... what?
The BSE-7 is a bound supernatural entity, a gremlin maliciously eager to destroy anything technological it comes across.
And you strapped it to my Humvee?
It was bound. Its energies were directed like a shaped explosive. All the tech-breaking power is pointed out and down, so anything you drive over, like a landmine or an IED, gets broken before it can do anything to hurt you. It can't do anything to your own vehicle. Unless, obviously, the binding breaks and it gets loose.
That thing came after us. Unless one of you is a robot and didn't tell me, I don't think it limits its destruction to technological devices.
Case in point, your dead friend over there.
Now you understand why we needed to find the salt as quickly as possible. The salt will hold it, though, as long as nothing breaks the circle.
So we're safe here until the next stiff breeze, or until we starve to death, whichever comes first.
We could probably retrieve the MREs without any major problems.
I think I'd prefer to starve.
There's got to be a way to kill it. Our guns fell apart, but the knife didn't. Maybe that's too simple a machine to be affected?
You can't kill a demon. Trust us on this one. You can only bind it.
Exactly what kind of engineer are you?
He didn't answer. The driver spoke up.
We can't forget the Taliban. This is the fourth IED we've run across in the last hour. There's a group here, and they're active, and they're doing something they don't want anyone to see. And after all the noise our gremlin's been making, they're gonna know we're here.
Can we use the radio with that thing's anti-technology field ruining everything?
Anything inside the salt circle should work fine.
Get it working. Tell them where we are and that we've been hit with an IED. Leave the weirder details vague.
My driver saluted and climbed through the window of the overturned vehicle. I looked at the engineer. Now, tell me everything you know about this gremlin.
It would probably be easier to just read the manual.
You have a manual for a gremlin?
The BSE-7 is intended for field use. We have a -10 operator's manual already printed, though it's obviously just a prototype.
The engineer pulled a slim paper booklet from his backpack and handed it to me.
BSE-7 vehicle-mounted anti-explosive device. The BSE-7 is powered by a Lambda-class demon, commonly called a gremlin. It is designed to be mounted under...
I skipped ahead, leafing past the usage sections to the fifth chapter. Maintenance. If the device fails and the supernatural entity becomes unbound, it can be held at bay with salt, which we've done. Salt can be found in every MRE and should be easy to come by even in the field. Your first action should be to contain the demon in a circle of salt, as an unbound gremlin inside of a base or camp can be surprisingly destructive. I threw the manual down. Our first action should be to contain the demon, you idiot, not us.
Yes, the manual makes that sound a lot easier than it is.
Yeah, they always do. I picked up the booklet, found the same page again, and continued reading. With the demon neutralized in a salt circle, report the malfunction immediately to your assigned demonologist. We have an assigned demonologist?
They're still in training. With plans to deploy just before the BSEs go into general use, we'd never send a demon into the field without a trained demonologist to wrangle it.
And you wouldn't test it without one, either. Is that you?
The engineer looked sadly at the corpse of the other engineer, and I nodded.
Of course it's him. Awesome. I was worried this would be too easy.
There should be a chapter on troubleshooting.
Does it just say to shoot it?
I don't recommend it.
We have an AT-4 in the trunk.
I really don't recommend it. Any weapon you use against it will fail as soon as it leaves the salt circle. And I don't think I have to tell you what happens when a rocket-propelled grenade fails.
It was just a suggestion.
Chapter 6, Troubleshooting. If you have no access to a demonologist, your first priority is to reinforce the salt circle containing the demon and requisition a new demonologist immediately.
Thanks. That's very helpful.
If you absolutely must attempt to control the demon without a trained expert, there are some tricks that may be useful. 1. Gremlins love sugar.
Seriously?
Absolutely love it.
Huh.
2. The binding agent on the BSE-7, unless completely destroyed, can be used again, with the understanding that damaged binding agents are prone to unexpected catastrophic failure.
Take a picture of the truck.
The driver crawled out of the Humvee.
You can put the photo in the manual as a perfect demonstration of unexpected catastrophic failure.
Did the radio work?
Well enough. The good news is the insurgents in this area won't be coming after us, because they've engaged in a firefight with our base.
And the bad news is that they can't come get us because they're engaged in a firefight.
Exactamundo. And so far, they're losing. They might not come get us at all. It's a very big group of insurgents.
I looked at the Humvee's blackened undercarriage.
So we're on our own in enemy territory, under direct assault by a demon, and the only thing we can use to stop it is that thing.
I pointed at the shattered BSE-7, a charred lump that looked like an upside-down pie plate. It had been torn open, and the inside was full of something dark and sticky.
Smells sweet.
They like sugar.
Smells like strawberry jam.
That gremlin's almost 3 feet tall. If he was crammed inside that tiny thing, no wonder he's pissed.
That goop, which, yes, probably contains strawberry jam, is the binding agent. Once he's bound into it, the physical space doesn't really matter. You could bind him into a teaspoon, and that's all the space you'd need. The majority of the BSE-7 is made up of the shaping agents that direct the gremlin's power away from the vehicle.
How do we get it back in?
Well, the manual explains it in detail, but the basic gist is fire and symbols and blood.
That's horrible.
It's a demon. What did you expect?
A plan was slowly forming in my head. What kind of grenades do we have for the AT-4?
Donkey punchers.
You really don't want to shoot him.
Sure I do. I skimmed through the section on demon binding. It was far more gruesome than expected. Just not in the way you think. I pointed at the gunner. Get me a grenade. And you, I pointed at the bomb tech. Take it apart. I pointed at the driver. You get a fire going. And last, I pointed at the engineer. One of those MREs we dumped out looking for salt was spaghetti, which means that somewhere out there is a pouch full of cherry cobbler. Go get it.
Out there?
Unless you brought it with you. Yeah.
That's on the other side of the salt line. There's a gremlin out there.
There's your gremlin out there, so anything it does to you, you probably deserve. Don't be scared, though. I'm coming with you. I'll grab the body. You get me the cobbler.
Why do you need the body?
Have you read these demon-binding notes?
Cobbler. Check.
I took a pinch of salt from the edge of the circle, careful not to break it completely, and on three, we ran. Me for the dead man, and the engineer for the pile of scattered MRE pouches. I quickly dragged the body back toward the Humvee. The gremlin leaped forward. I threw the dead body into the circle and ran back toward the engineer, still scrambling on his hands and knees for the cherry cobbler. I threw the salt at it, buying us a few precious seconds, and together we found the pouch of cobbler and ran back to the Humvee. The engineer's shirt pocket was stained dark blue, and his pants and belt were singed.
Oh, my pen's broke.
And the burn marks?
My phone caught fire.
I tore open the cobbler pack, reached out past the salt, and placed it on the ground. The gremlin was furious that we'd gotten away a second time, but soon he paused. He crept closer and looked at the cobbler, then at the salt, then at us. He took another step. A few moments later, he was sitting by the open dessert pouch, his hands and face smeared with thick red syrup as he munched happily on the cherries.
That's the weirdest damn thing I've ever seen.
You got my grenade?
Here.
The bomb tech handed me a Head P-502, the high-explosive donkey punch, basically a metal tube with a short, stubby point on the end. He'd removed the tapered end piece, exposing a cone of explosives inside. And I set that part down far away from the fire. The empty end piece I filled with binding agent from the BSE-7, and then I sat back looking at the others. This is going to get gross. They nodded, eyes grim. I propped open the Demon's Dash 10 manual with a rock and proceeded to perform unspeakably horrible acts on the body of the dead engineer.
You can't put that.
The lead engineer fainted twice before the ritual was done, and I admit that I was pretty woozy as well, from disgust rather than blood loss, since I only needed a couple of drops. With the bloody symbols drawn on the sides of the grenade, and the end piece thoroughly smeared with horrifically reinforced binding goop, I took a deep breath, said a quick prayer, apologizing, as I did, for dabbling in demonology, and tossed the end piece out past the salt and into the gremlin's half-finished cobbler. The Dash 10 included a handy pronunciation guide for the incantation.
Potentia Dei Cogit Ligari.
And the gremlin was sucked into the binding agent like a genie going back into a bottle.
I take it back. That is the weirdest damn thing I've ever seen.
Fit it back on.
I handed the bomb tech the gently smoking end piece. He looked at it, then at the exposed explosives of the grenade, and shook his head.
You want me to attach a make-things-break demon to a high-explosive warhead? I'm not convinced that this is the smartest thing either of us have ever done.
Just fit it on. It'll hold for a couple of hours at least.
Oh, what now?
Now we shoot him. The engineer frowned, confused, and I smiled. Now we shoot him at the insurgents. The Taliban were still attacking our base, and because we'd been driving so slowly, looking for mines, the hour we'd spent driving had only taken us about 5 clicks away from it. The bomb tech finished reassembling the grenade, and we loaded as much gear as we could before running back through the desert. The Afghanistan hills were steep and rocky under any circumstances, and even more so here in the brambles. Our travel was slow, but the engineer kept up more admirably than I expected. We made it to a low ridge after barely 20 minutes of running. We didn't have a perfect view of the battle, but we could tell the insurgents were winning. They had mortars, snipers, good cover, and higher ground than our guys, who were essentially pinned down behind the smoking wreckage of their vehicles. There was no backup in sight. Well, none but us. I loaded the rocket-propelled Gremlin in the AT-4 and handed it to the gunner. Don't worry about a target. Just land the little bastard in the middle of their forces and let him go to work. The gunner judged the distance carefully, tested the wind, aimed high for extra distance.
Alpha Mike Foxtrot.
The grenade sailed over the valley, trailing smoke in a fierce, straight line, and exploded in a giant ball of fire against the back of a Jeep. One by one, we watched as the distant insurgents stopped firing forward and turned to look at their own battle, at the clouds of dust and oil that flew up first in one place and then another. We were too far away to see the Gremlin himself, but we could track his progress easily, watching as a truck fell to pieces, as a mounted machine gun sloughed parts like a crumbling cookie, as a mortar misfired and exploded on the ground. Some of the Taliban tried to fight it, but others simply ran in terror, some toward us and some toward our base. No longer pinned down by fire, our friendly forces caught them easily. We zip-tied their thumbs, frisked them for weapons, and started the slow walk around the frenzied Gremlin.
There's enough machinery in that insurgent battle line to keep him busy for a week.
You better get another demonologist in by then, because if I have to do another binding ritual, I'm using you for the parts.
I'll put in a call the instant we get back to base.
Good. Now tell me something else. This Gremlin was the BSE-7?
Correct.
So there are at least 6 other bound supernatural entities being developed for field use?
11, actually. How would you like to perform another test next week?
I.E. Demon, an essay, part 3.
I pared this draft back to the bare bones, cutting out a lot of the unnecessary business and characters in order to get straight into the actual plot. I took this so far, in fact, that I jettisoned the characters' names altogether, mostly as an experiment. Some of my readers didn't like this, some of them did, but I thought it worked really well, so I kept it all the way to the final. Most of the changes I made for this new draft came from a close examination of the load-bearing plot elements, thinking long and hard about what I really needed to accomplish and what I didn't, and what would be the best way of going about it. For example, number 4 required them to be alone, but it didn't demand that they get separated from a larger convoy. I had them in a large convoy in the first draft because it felt natural, but that's not the same thing as load-bearing, so out it went. They leave the base on their own, and boom, we're done. No 2 pages of conversation required. That's not to say that the convoy was a bad idea, just not a good fit for this situation in length. The characters changed a bit as well, most notably by turning the Spook into an engineer. The Spook was kind of a fun, smarmy weasel to write about, but making him a weasel meant that I was adding a conflict I didn't need, a personality clash between a military hero and a government villain withholding information. That kind of conflict would need an arc of its own, even a small one, and eventually a resolution. Again, it was simply too much for such a short piece, so out it went. Making the government dude into a scared egghead allowed me to piggyback the hero versus outsider conflict onto the core, holy crap, how do we get out of this conflict? It's worth noting that all of these personality changes could have been made without altering the character's profession. I could have had a weasel engineer or an egghead secret agent, but my research told me that equipment field tests are more typically overseen by engineers. So that decided it. Making the government person less competent overall also helped my main character have more room to shine as a hero. Where the weaselly Spook might have stepped up and tried to deal with the Gremlin himself, the terrified engineer is completely out of his element, giving the main character a chance to make important decisions and come up with clever plans on his own. I also gave him a little boost by splitting the engineer into 2 guys and then killing one of them, so the team is left with some basic knowledge about how the gremlin works, but none of the expertise needed to deal with him. The main character gets to step into that gap and save the day. Last of all, I made the switch from third to first person specifically as a way of getting into that character's head and showing more of his thought process, his anger at being hung out to dry, and his determination to make it all work anyway. I probably could still have done all that in third person, but the previous draft convinced me that first person was the way to go. As you can see, this draft is very close to final. I was happy with the flow, the voice, and so on. There was still a lot of polishing to do, but it's more subtle, which is why it's important to do multiple revisions. The first pass took care of all the big-ticket problems, but the second one drilled down to some very specific stuff. In this case, most of that stuff was military. I sent this draft to two friends of mine, Ethan Skarstedt and Mike Kapari, both Afghanistan veterans, and they gave me pages and pages of incredibly valuable notes covering everything from the specific gear choices, the AT-4 grenade launcher I have them using the second draft as a single-shot disposable weapon so they would not have different rounds for it, to the personnel. The vehicle they drive would have a three-man team of leader, driver, gunner, without the extra bomb squad guy I'd thrown in. Most importantly, they let me know that the circumstances of my story were implausible to the point of being ridiculous. The idea that a Taliban insurgency force would directly assault a U.S. firebase is laughable, and even if they did, they wouldn't have the kind of numbers or present the kind of threat that I described in this draft. Time to change it again. The major changes leading into the third draft were, as I said, mostly military in nature. I gave the characters different gear, adjusted the story to fit, and changed the ending so they used the gremlin to rescue a convoy instead of an entire firebase. The insurgent force presented in this version of the story is still huge, as Taliban forces go, but it's more believable, especially because the sheer volume of IEDs in the story has primed us to expect a higher-than-average Taliban presence. Luckily, my load-bearing plot elements did not demand that the firebase be attacked, only that the characters use the gremlin to save somebody, so I could make these changes without altering the core story. At this point, the plot works, the characters work, the military details work, and I'm really happy with it. Peter Alstrom, a good friend and an excellent editor, ran through it for a final editing pass, cleaning up some of the proofing and consistency errors, and while I agreed with almost all of the changes, there were a handful I didn't like, so I said no. I want to make a point of this because I do it all the time, and I think most authors do. In this case, the only change I had any serious objection to was Peter's attempt to decapitalize my jargon terms like bound supernatural entity and rocket-propelled gremlin. It is, I admit, correct to have these terms in lowercase, but I could not possibly care less about that. I wanted these words capitalized because I think they add to the story and the world, and I liked being able to call attention to them not just as phrases, but as specifically military terms. Military jargon is overflowing with acronyms, and my story relies on them heavily. Even the title is an acronym joke. Choosing to ignore the copy editor's suggestions for meaningful stylistic reasons is an important part of the editing process. This is also good to remember the next time you find an error in a published book. Don't blame the proofreaders, because for all you know, they found it and the author changed it back. We're jerks like that sometimes. I'm very pleased with this story. I think it's hands down my best piece of short fiction, which is maybe not a very impressive claim because I don't write a lot of short fiction, but I'm working at it. And I think this one stands up proudly. I hope you like it as much as I do.